It's The Record on KUOW with David Hyde. I'm Marcy Silman. When I think about Thanksgiving, I think about that iconic Norman Rockwell magazine cover of the family dinner with the beautiful turkey on the plate. It's an iconic American image. Well, author Deborah Solomon studied American art in college, and David Hyde, Norman Rockwell was not on the curriculum.
Of course, Norman Rockwell, 20th century painter and illustrator, famous for his iconic depictions of everyday life in America, like those Thanksgiving dinners. But at the time, he was written off as a lowly illustrator, a toxic culture polluter.
Wow, that's pretty harsh. After seeing a show of his work in 2001, Deborah Solomon decided realist and figurative painting like Rockwell's deserved some credit. So she dove into Norman Rockwell's life, and she wrote a book called American Mirror, The Life and Art of Norman Rockwell. Our colleague Ross Reynolds interviewed Deborah Solomon, and he asked her what the art world had against Norman Rockwell.
First of all, he was a figure painter in the age of abstraction, right? And it was a time when people believed that abstract painting, splashes and drips, were somehow more emotional than scenes of, say, a drugstore. So that was one issue, the fact that he was a figurative painter. Also, he earned money. That was another modernist no-no. And probably his greatest sin was that he was very popular. Avant-garde artists prided themselves on having no connection to the bourgeoisie. That was one of the goals of modern art, to épaté the bourgeoisie or to shock the middle class. And Rockwell was beloved by America, and that was also held against him.
How did most people know the work of Norman Rockwell?
Most people saw it on magazine covers, especially the Saturday Evening Post, which in the early years of the 20th century had the largest circulation of any magazine in this country. This was before TV or radio or internet, obviously. And people sitting at their kitchen table love to pore over his covers, which really do reward sustained looking and are filled with all kinds of intriguing details.
He was arguably the single most famous American artist of his time. What was his
The only famous American artist of his time. How many artists can most people name?
What was his public persona? How did he present himself to the public?
It was very important to him to be seen as a good-natured, folksy, unrushed, amused, forever joking, regular guy. Normal Norman is how he wanted to be seen.
And was that the way he really was in private?
No. I think if we were going to judge him on his pain and suffering, he's right up there with the greatest artist who ever lived. He was a very tormented man who always lamented, first of all, his physical inadequacies. He felt small and unathletic compared to his gifted older brother, who was a star athlete as well as a good student. And he also felt an incredible sense of inadequacy in terms of his work. He was the type of artist who would wake up in the morning looking forward to the day ahead. And then by the end of the day, chastise himself for having accomplished so little. And in general, he felt like his work never really measured up to his vision of what his art should be. And this sense of incompleteness would drive him forward the next morning when he woke up and thought once again, I'll get it right today.
Norman Rockwell is famously associated with Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where his museum exists today. Why did he come to live in Stockbridge?
He had been living in Vermont, in an isolated part of southern Vermont, the town of Arlington. And he eventually left and moved to Stockbridge in order to enter treatment with a very famous analyst, Eric Erickson, who was at the time working at the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge. Rockwell's wife was also treated at the Austin Riggs Center. This was his second wife, who suffered from very severe depression and alcoholism. And many people think of Stockbridge as a quintessential New England town with picket fences and grazing cows and nice little shops. But in fact, in the 50s, it was certainly an American capital of psychoanalysis. There were many great shrinks living there. And Rockwell was drawn to the town because he thought it could help heal him.
Did it help him?
Absolutely. He was in treatment with Eric Erickson, one of the great psychoanalysts of the 20th century. Some consider Eric Erickson second only to Freud. And he and Rockwell had a very unconventional relationship that lasted for 8 years. They socialized together. Erickson dropped by his studio or made house calls frequently to see what he was up to. And I think it probably was the most constructive relationship of Rockwell's life. It provided him with much-needed emotional support and encouragement.
Norman Rockwell didn't sell a lot of paintings for a lot of years. How did he become how did he gain legitimacy in the art world? How did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a long, slow process that really happened after his death. I think probably the most important show happened in 2001 when Robert Rosenblum, who was a Picasso scholar, he's no longer alive, but Robert Rosenblum, the great Picasso scholar and art historian at NYU, organized a Rockwell show at the Guggenheim Museum in 2001. And I think the climate was right the time was right for us to acknowledge that there was a lot to the work, that it had enormous mystery and staying power. I think he had to await the advent of postmodernism in order to be acknowledged as an artist, because the modern movement was always going to snub him. Postmodernism, as you know, relaxed the division between high art and pop culture and made room for a lot of figures who deserve major recognition, such as Rockwell.
I was surprised to see that Andy Warhol, big fan of Norman Rockwell, and also you describe how the pop art movement of the 60s helped to kind of pave the way for more widespread recognition of Norman Rockwell as an artist. How did it do that?
Right. Well, pop art erased the line between high art and mainstream culture, or mass culture, I should say. For instance, when Andy Warhol put a soup can on a canvas and when Roy Lichtenstein elevated a cartoon girl to the realm of art, they were saying that there is a connection between high art and pop culture, that they don't represent two totally separate spheres, as art historians had pretended for a century. And that helped make room for Rockwell. People became basically more friendly towards the artistic potential of pop culture in the 1960s.
Talk about one or two of his paintings that you particularly admire and why you admire them.
I would have to say that I admire his Ruby Bridges painting probably the most. It's known as The Problem We All Live With. It shows Ruby Bridges being escorted to school by federal marshals in New Orleans. She's desegregating the school. And it's really, after all these years, recognized as the defining image of the civil rights movement in America. And I think it's interesting that Rockwell was able to do that after a career spent doing very different scenes, genre scenes, which kind of celebrated normality in America. It so forcefully captured our dreams of equality in the 1960s.
One that I particularly like is called The Runaway. Could you describe that picture and its iconic status in art?
The Runaway. It shows a very beefy policeman sitting in a diner with a little boy who presumably has run away and whom the policeman has brought back home. And it's amazing that we can read so much into it based on a single frame. It's like a single frame movie. We see the boy is carrying a bindle stick, satchel type thing. And we assume that maybe he made it as far as the town limit, but didn't get beyond that. And it was painted at a time when On the Road, Jack Kerouac's On the Road, was a bestseller. And a lot of kids were heading off on their own on the road. And this, to me, relates to that in the sense that this boy was a little bit too young to be on the road. So the policeman brought him back and took him to a diner where they're sitting side by side on stools at the counter, having presumably a very constructive conversation.
I'm speaking with Deborah Solomon about her work, American Mirror, The Life and Art of Norman Rockwell. What would you ask Norman Rockwell if you got a chance to interview him, Deborah?
Oh, that's such a good question. I always wanted to know. I always wanted to know whether he saw the Armory Show of 1913. It was a colossal show in New York, and it caused many American artists to start painting abstractly, right? Finally, they were exposed to Picasso and Braque, and they became abstract painters. And I have a feeling Rockwell saw that show, But he resisted modernism, and that has always interested me. Why didn't he become an abstract painter? Why didn't he go with the flow? And I think temperamentally, he was just unsuited for it. He really was in love with the figure.
And he wanted to make a living, didn't he?
Okay. You're absolutely right. Commercial art paid. Magazine covers paid. But the truth is, he lost money on those Saturday Evening Post covers. He labored so long on them and was such a perfectionist that they were not lucrative for him. He ended up making most of his money through doing other kinds of work, meaning advertising, like Kellogg ads for Green Giant corn niblets and Kellogg's cornflakes and tires and refrigerators and all kinds of products.
What eluded you about Norman Rockwell, even after writing this entire book about him and learning so much about him?
Much about him remained very mysterious to me. I feel like, as a critic, I'm comfortable analyzing the art, which is knowable. I think art is knowable, but that people are always mysterious.
Author Deborah Solomon, she wrote the book American Mirror, The Life and Art of Norman Rockwell. She spoke with Ross Reynolds.